So is baseball going to be back in Montreal? Yes or no? It's there this weekend, but I mean permanently.
Yeah, this weekend, right. I think eventually it might happen. This latest quote-unquote news does nothing to answer the two main questions, which have never been answered. Number one, what's the mechanism for baseball coming to Montreal? That has to be relocation or expansion. As you know, no team has relocated in 40-plus years. That team is the same team that, or the same city, rather, that's trying to now regain baseball, so that's a problem. Expansion could happen, but that requires voting on it by 30 other owners. And if the 30 other owners are going to split up the revenue pie, that means you're probably talking a buy-in of like $1 billion, which leads us to question number two, which is how are you going to get the money? Because if you talk about $1 billion, something like that, plus a stadium, which bare bones is going to be $600 or $700 million, you're basically talking $2 billion or more Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't doubt that Bell and Stephen Bronfman and Mitch Garber and all these people who we all know and love from Montreal, and it's a small community. And
well, we don't love Bell. We don't love Bell.
Okay, we don't love Bell. That's
all right.
Yeah, shame on Bell. But other than that, all these individuals, that's fine. But how are you going to get $2.2 billion Canadian? That's not an easy thing to do. So, yeah, the conditions have been met. But Manfred has said it's a great market. This is all lovely. I would also love to, great. By that standard, I should be on the Montreal Expos or whatever the team is called. Unfortunately, neither I, these guys, I guess, do have combined $2 billion, but, haven't necessarily shown that they can or will deliver that kind of money. Those are the questions that need to be answered. Not saying it can never happen, but it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Are you, Jonah, is this the fourth year of the Jays there? I think it is, something like that.
Yeah, fourth year.
It, and this thing has been way more successful than I would have ever anticipated. Even after the first year, you thought, well, it's a one-off. It was a novelty. But mm-hmm. they sold 90,000 tickets for the two games. Is there any correlation, between this kind of once-a-year baseball fest, sort of nostalgia fest attached to it in Montreal, and what it would take to sustain a team over 81 home games?
A little bit. Everything that you just said is exactly how I feel about this weekend. Didn't think it'd be that big the first time, and then when it happened, didn't think it would sustain, and it has, and it's been great. And there's definitely enthusiasm for this kind of thing. Obviously, one-off events are going to generate more interest. I mean, this is why the Super Bowl is more popular. I mean, heck, this is why NFL Sunday in general is more popular than baseball on a random Tuesday. There's just fewer of the events happening, and so you get excited about it. But I think the fundamentals potentially are there, and I think the fundamentals go back a long, long time, back to the days of Chris DeBerg, I guess. Famously, as we know, the Expos outdrew the New York Yankees at one point in the 80s. 82, 83, they were averaging $2 million a year. They were very popular. Jeff has said this on the show, that they were arguably more popular than the Habs at the time. Michael mm-hmm. Barber said that. Many people have said that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could go back to that era. It's just that now, obviously, it's a different generation. The people that were spearheading it then, they've given way to their kids and, in some cases, grandkids. And those newer generations have to get into it. So it's a big enough market. I think there's enough interest, but it's going to take some work.
I was going to say, it just kind of brought me just what I was going to ask you, Jonah, because one of the things that has changed in Toronto is not just that the Jays got good, but there was a demographic flip in the audience that, and you can mm-hmm. tell anybody who was in the stadium 10 years ago would have looked around and said it was the Remember When audience, right? It was one of my pals in the music business always refers to those crowd as the Q-tips because you can see the white heads all around, so it was a Q-tip crowd. It was a Remember When crowd, right? It was, I remember 77 or I remember 92, 93. And it was old and it was kind of creaky and you kind of wondered, what happens? You go down there now and not just on the drunken home opener, but any night there's kind of this young hipster urban baseball audience that, and you combine that with a national audience and that's kind of what you've got with the current version of Jays Mania. Do you think that demographic flip has or would happen in Montreal?
Well, I'll answer your question more generally first.
Okay.
That's who you need to support a product, and that's, that's sort of normal to support a product, right? I mean, if you're young and upwardly mobile, that's where the money comes from. That's when you want to go out more. That's when you want to do all that stuff. It's not to say that if you're in your 60s, you don't have money. I mean, usually you will have much more money in your 60s than you will when you're 30 or whatever. But you're not necessarily going to trek out to the stadium 40 times and buy the pennants and get the passes and the playoffs and all this stuff. So this is all a good sign. Montreal has that population in general. I mean, it's not like the city is decaying in terms of its age group. I mean, it turns over. We've got younger generations. They exist. You know, the question is, are they going to be motivated? It's not an easy question for me. First of all, I haven't lived in Montreal in 20 years. So, I mean, this is all coming from a distance. And secondly, it's a matter of motivation, right? I mean, it might be that generation is there and could glom onto it as a curiosity. So I would say that if the team came back, you know, opening day next year, I think that you would see people who are 28 going to the Big O to check it out and see what happens. They would have to have their interest sustained, though. It's the same thing as the Jays. The Jays didn't really turn over, you know, until the team got better. So You would have the honeymoon period like anything else. They'd move into the new stadium. Obviously, you need a new stadium to play in Montreal. And then the proof would be in the pudding. If the team was miserable for the next 20 years to follow, that generation could be just, you know, salted, and then nothing would happen, and the kids of that generation would not end up being interested in baseball.
All right, let's move to an easy question. Who wins the American League and National League this year?
Well, I always say this with a caveat because the playoffs are a crapshoot, and the Cubs were the best team last year, and they won, but usually the best team doesn't win the World Series. It doesn't always even get to the World Series. Such as it is, I took the Cubs and the Astros in the two leagues, but, you know, it's more important to think about who's going to make the playoffs, I think, than it is to think about who's going to win these random three or five or seven-game series or whatever, because it's short and weird things can happen.
I wanted to take the Astros, but I chickened out and went with the Indians.
Don't you think they're kind of a starting pitcher short still?
Well, I was going to say, our friend Ken Rosenthal, in doing his preseason picks, called Carlos Quintana to win the – or, sorry, Jose Quintana to win the MVP award in the American League and listed him as pitching for the White Sox / Astros.
There you go.
That's really – that's the thing that almost has to happen, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And I can remember a conversation I had with Jeff Luhnow. This is back in – it must have been 15, I guess, when Granlin, may it rest in peace, still existed. And Jeff was on my podcast, and the Astros were just starting to be good. This was the first year they were good after they were miserable. And I said to Jeff, this is great. You've got homegrown guy, Jose Altuve, George Springer, Dallas Keuchel. Wow, what a parade of great homegrown players. But, dude, you're not going very far unless you actually open up the checkbook and unless you actually go out and make impact trades. He said, it's coming. You know, it's going to happen. We'll have the revenue. Houston, by the way, is a gigantic city. I mean, it is a big market. It should generate
5 million people, yeah.
Yeah, huge. And what's happened is that's come to fruition. If you look at what the Astros did this offseason, yes, they didn't go out and get impact pitching because the free agent market for pitchers was terrible, and there was only one major trade. It was Chris Sale. And that was, you know, kind of a pretty significant trade in terms of prospects. But the Astros still went out and got McCann. They got Reddick. They got Beltran. They probably have the best lineup in all of baseball right now. And so the thinking here is, yes, the market wasn't very fruitful in terms of starting pitching in the offseason, but you go into in-season, and whether it's Quintana or somebody else, could be a pitcher coming up on a walk year, could be something else, they get it done. And not for nothing, the Astros have a monster bullpen. You know, they don't necessarily have an Aroldis Chapman or a guy who you know fluently if you're a casual fan, but like 1 through 6, they've just got, you know, seed throwers out there who absolutely kill you, and that's a big factor too. And we know, you know, we've seen the Royals, we've seen other teams really succeed with okay starting pitching and a great bullpen. So I think they already have a good enough team to go to the World Series potentially. And if they do get a guy like Quintana, who's very good and probably still underrated in the casual spheres, then that puts them in great shape.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing that should be mentioned about the Astros is if Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers Jr. can come back. And Lance McCullers Jr. looked really good.
Love him. He's great.
Oh, he's a terrific pitcher, but a couple of outings this spring – you know, he's changed the grip and his changeup, and he's dropped his arm angle. His mechanics are a bit less of a mess. But if he comes back, that's a really good team. And you know what? And that's a tough division. That's a tough division because I love what Seattle's done, and Texas is Texas.
And in fact, for my postseason predictions, I have 3 AL West. The same with the AL East. It took 3 to the playoffs last year. I have all 3 of those teams going, Seattle, Texas, and Houston. I think they all make it. Seattle, by the way, the longest playoff drought after the Blue Jays snapped theirs. What I really like about Seattle, yeah, they've got the big boppers with Cruz and Seager and Cano, but they've done a really nice job of upgrading that outfield defense. Now you've got these little jackrabbits like Jerrod Dyson chasing balls. if you're in a roto draft this weekend, go draft James Paxton, the Canadian, who's got a monster strikeout rate, third hardest fastball among any pitcher in all baseball, and now anything that goes in the air is going to get caught in the outfield. Like him a lot. Drew Smyly's a nice little acquisition as well. This is a very good, quietly, a very good and a very balanced team in, as you said, a tough division.
That would,
like Seattle this year a lot.
That would indicate to me if all three teams make the playoffs, you do not have the locals. Unless you have the locals winning the American League East. Ho, ho, ho.
I unfortunately do not, but you know, we're talking. Hang on, we're talking about margins of error here.
Yes.
I think the Jays are roughly an 85 win team. If one believes that, then the margin of error is 4 or 5 wins. Well, 4 or 5 wins more than that puts them in the playoffs. So I think they're there. I think a few things have to happen. First of all, you know, the rumblings that have been made about Steve Pearce playing a bunch. Let's hope they come to fruition, because I don't like Justin Smoke. I don't like their left field situation. I know that our friend Shai Davidi has written a great article saying, calm down, crazy people. It's okay. First base and left field are okay. No, they're not. They're terrible.
Yes,
Pearce
I agree.
Needs to play as much as possible in one or both positions, and then they need to figure out the other position. Now, you can have teams win the World Series with weaknesses. It is doable, but it relies on everything else being perfect. That means that Bautista has to be back to being Bautista. It means that the starting pitching, which is really good, by the way, has to execute exactly like last year and nobody gets hurt. You know, it means that you're relying on a bunch of other things to go exactly right. And it's not to say that I begrudge Donaldson or that I think Pilar suddenly will stop catching fly balls. All those things, generally speaking, are true. It's just that in baseball, you have to assume bad scenarios as well as good ones. And you've already created, for no good reason, two horrible scenarios, you know, at two of your power positions, which really makes no sense.
Who else, you know, if you... So let's include the Jays in the playoff conversation in the American League.
Sure.
Now, if you're projecting them as an 85 win team, so so Houston, Seattle, Texas, correct? Is that who you were? And Cleveland and Boston would be your playoff teams. The
That's
Jays would be in that conversation. Is anybody else in that conversation?
Well, listen, I mean, I think we have to stop begrudging Baltimore. Just acknowledge that they perform some sort of voodoo that allows them to overachieve whatever Bakota and the fantasy projection system say, and it is the case that they have a lot of power. Finally, we could start talking about having a little bit of potential with starting rotation, right? Gosman kind of took a step forward last year, and Dylan Bundy might be good this year or eventually.
But Tillman's hurt, right?
Tillman is hurt, but it doesn't look serious. It looks like he'll be back pretty soon. And they still have a great bullpen, which, again, is the equalizer. You know, the thinking – here's the deal with bullpens and people like me. People like me and computer systems tend to – we acknowledge that bullpens are very important. We just discount them in our projections because we assume that relievers are flammable and unpredictable and weird things happen, right? Maybe you know that Osuna is going to be good every year, but you can't rely on a Grilly or a Biagini or whatever. You don't know that they're blue chippers. Why? Because relief pitchers are failed starters. And go ask Glenn Perkins, the former closer of the Minnesota Twins, this. Go ask any smart relief pitcher, and they will tell you they know what they are. They're not Noah Syndergaard. They're not, you know, even Aaron Sanchez. To throw brilliantly for 7 innings is infinitely harder than throwing well for 7 pitches. And because these pitchers are by definition inferior, it invites variance in performance. So if you're the Baltimore Orioles and you've got a monster bullpen 5 years in a row, you are really, really defying the odds. Now, maybe this is the new normal in baseball because, again, you've got Kansas City, you've got the Yankees to some extent, you've got Houston, and maybe you've got Baltimore. Maybe now we're at a point where we can start to predict bullpens. It's just new to people like me to say, oh, yeah, well, obviously this bullpen is going to be great, and it's going to make up for a lot of the other weaknesses. This is something that has rarely existed in baseball history, where we knew that year after year after year, a team that wore a certain uniform would just kill you from the sixth inning on.
So, okay, so I will bow to Voodoo and the genius of Buck Showalter, okay? So if to put them in the mix, I think they're going to be bad this year, but – it has to happen. It has to happen eventually. There's my advanced metrics. It has to happen eventually. Can we go beyond that though, Jonah? Like, does Detroit have a sniff? Does Kansas City? Do the Yankees? Jeff and I disagree on Tampa. I think Tampa is going to be bad this year too.
Tampa will be okay. Detroit's a little intriguing because of Daniel Norris. Daniel Norris. I wrote a piece about breakouts last week for CBSSports.com. I mentioned Paxton. Norris is another guy that I think could be a breakout pitcher. He's shown signs. He started to iron out his command issues. Don't forget this guy, you know, Blue Jays product, of course, dealt with cancer. I mean, these are serious things. It's not like, oh, I stubbed a toe. I mean, he had life and career issues that kind of held him back, but he's always been talented. and the possibility is there for something. And of course, if he becomes, you know, like Fulmer last year, all of a sudden they have Norris, Fulmer, and Verlander. That's real interesting. Mm. That's a very dynamic staff. So, you know, I could see that. I like the Yankees as a team that's fun to watch. Like, they're going to have a lot of really good young talent. I just don't know that if they're, let's say they're an 85-win-ish team and they get to June or July, are they going to go out and trade, you know, Gleyber Torres or one of the top prospects and go get some old fat guy to hit 40 home runs? I just don't think they're going to do that because that's not their mandate. So they almost need everything to go right because they're probably not going to sacrifice the future for the present, which is the New York Yankees, and it's crazy to say, but that's where we're at. And Kansas City doesn't do much for me. I like Danny Duffy. Mm-hmm. They do have a bunch of guys. Here's the thing. Kansas City could be the most intriguing team in baseball, even though inherently they might be a 500 club, because they've got so many guys in their walk year. Hosmer, yeah. Payne, Moustakas, Escobar. They did lock up Duffy.
Right.
But what do they do if they get to the deadline and they're around 500? Does Dayton Moore cash all those guys in? Do the Blue Jays go out and acquire Eric Hosmer? That would be really interesting.
I'll tell you what. Mike Moustakas, based on what he was doing last year before he was hurt,
yep.
He's a guy. If he comes back, there will be teams lining up for him because he's a free. He's only 28. Like, he's going to be a free agent in his 29th birthday. I'd line up for that guy.
Well, I think that sure. I think that's valid. And even if you think that Lorenzo Cain is more 2016 version than 15, that's a guy who's a Gold Glove caliber outfielder who runs and hits. I mean, you know, these are good players who just might not be long term parts of the solution. So. Yeah, no, it becomes a very different thing. And the Yankees kind of dictated last year's trade deadline, right? Mm-hmm. They had Miller and Chapman. There weren't that many blockbuster trades. So as a result, they became the team to watch. We just don't know how Kansas City reacts in this era. Dayton Moore spent years building this nucleus. Of course, they go to the World Series 2 years in a row. And now we're at the point where the core could be gone. So, yeah, you know, Hosmer, Moustakas, Kane. I mean, Escobar can't hit, but he's an awfully good fielder. These are very interesting pieces and could change National League races. There's nothing
sure.
that says that Eric Hosmer can't go out to another league or Moustakas can't go out to a National League team.
How do you see the Cubs keeping their interest up this year? Will they have to do it for themselves, or will there be a team that'll keep them interested until the postseason?
I mean, you've asked me a psychological question, which is not my forte, and I'm not a psychologist, so I'll just say
that. But you know Joe Madden.
I do know Joe Madden. And by the way, let me, usually I plug my own work, let me recommend Tom Verducci's book, The Cubs Way. I guess I am going to plug my own work, because I reviewed it for the Wall Street Journal, and that will be out April 8th, the review
Excellent.
Of that book. But it's good. It really gets into the Cubs way. And you would think that it would be all about, well, this is our formula for blah, 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 and this is how we came to acquire Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant or Kyle Schwarber. No, it's all about the mental stuff. And this was the makeup that we were looking for in these franchise players. These are the types of guys. These are the methods that Joe Madden uses to try to motivate his players. I mean, it was all about that, and I was ready to kind of scoff at it, but it's pretty good because it's Tom Verducci, and he's great. Really, really interesting stuff. And if you look at it, it suggests a culture whereby they're going to be motivated. You know, they're not necessarily going to be fat and happy. They're going to get after it. And also, I would say this, they're so talented that if they're slightly less motivated, that's still probably good enough. They're still probably winning that division. They're still challenging for another World Series.
Who's nipping at their heels in the National League? The Dodgers, the Nationals, is there a longer list?
I think the Cardinals are going to be better than last year. I think they go back to the playoffs. The flip of Fowler from Chicago to St. Louis, I like Fowler a lot. Gosh, I wish he was a Blue Jay. I mean, that's the perfect kind of player that they needed,
mm-hmm.
two-way guy and all that. I think the Mets are going to be interesting. They have a ton, even beyond their kind of big-name pitchers, they have a guy named Robert Gazelman, who's a really good sleeper. They just have a lot. It's just a matter of, is their lineup going to be too old? We're getting to the point where we're relying a lot on these Granderson, Bruce types, and that's asking a lot, so we'll see. Giants could be interesting. I might have even said the Rockies were kind of a hot sleeper, but they've got so many guys hurt now. David Dahl, their exciting young outfielder's hurt. They've got a kid named Chad Bennett, who unfortunately, much like Daniel Norris, is having cancer, and he's sitting out. They've just got a couple of guys who are really impacting what I thought could be an upside season and maybe a sort of a fringe playoff type of year. So the Cubs are the best team on paper, but yeah, Nationals and Dodgers are very good, and there's a kind of middle class, same as the American League, right? There's this kind of Blue Jays-ish teams that could win 85, 86, 87.
One of the interesting award debates this year. Well, it's always going to be interesting as long as Mike Trout is playing. I mean, it really is, because you could basically vote Mike Trout as your MVP. You could fill out your ballot for the next 4 years, and you'd probably be right unless he's traded. But who is the guy that you think could challenge Mike Trout for AL MVP this year? You know, again, I've heard Lindor mentioned, a couple of people. I happen to think Carlos Correa, if he's really healthy. I mean, he hasn't even scratched the surface yet. Are there any names that step out or that stand out to you as somebody who will be the annual, I don't want to vote for Mike Trout, so who can I vote for guy?
Well, and I think that the way that you phrase that is exactly right, and I will invoke a name for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
The name is Terry Pendleton.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to 1991, and I understand that the electorate has changed. We're much more progressive. You know, we've got war. We've got all this stuff. It's not just home runs and RBIs and playoff berths. But the bottom line is, if you go back to that, and I mean, Barry Bonds should have won 14 MVPs or something. He was the best player in the league every year, pretty much. But they were looking for a reason. The Braves went worst to first in 1991, and they said, Terry Pendleton, he's 5'8", 240. He hit 320. We like him a lot. He's our MVP. Which is crazy, because Barry Bonds was the best player of the year. Pre-PEDs, post-PED, always. He was always the best. And so that's Trout. The way that I describe Trout, I wrote a piece for SI, which ranks the 50 most valuable trade commodities in all of baseball. And it talks about not just talent, but also contract and age and all this stuff. And anyway, in the column, I said that Trout is Willie Mays. He might not have the flair of Willie Mays. He might not be create as visceral reaction to his generation as Mays did. But statistically, his first 5 years of his career, first five full years, they're identical to Willie Mays. Mm. So we're watching Willie Mays right now. That's incredible. So by definition, you're going to have some shenanigans to have somebody who's better than Willie Mays. Might be that none of these guys ever are best. Trout stays healthy every year. Maybe he's the best player every year, too. But I think that voter fatigue, even in a progressive era of kind of, you know, younger writers who really get all this stuff, they might look for something else. And I think that guy could be Mookie Betts, too. That's the other guy. Because Betts is right in that zone. He's young and exciting. He was really good last year. I have no reason to think that he won't be really good this year. The Red Sox probably are a playoff team, whether or not they win the division. And he's going to put up numbers. So I think that you hit Correa and Lindor. The only issue with Lindor is a lot is going to depend on his defense. He's not hitting 40 home runs. Correa could. Right. Betts could hit 30 or 35. Lindor's kind of going to be a sneakier sort of pick. So I could see any of those guys being up there. You know, you would think Seattle's going to be really good. At what point is Nelson Cruz going to get credit for hitting 45 home runs every single year?
Yeah.
I guess that maybe we've come so far with war and defense that we're never going back, that these guys that are, you know, the big proverbial sluggers, the Trumbos and Cruzes, maybe they never win. But gosh, you know, Cano and Seager and Cruz are all going to put up numbers. Seattle makes playoffs. I don't know, maybe they split the vote, maybe they don't. So, you know, the bottom line here is I think if Betts is up there, Correa is probably a good call. Trout's the best player, but there will be a year or three when he doesn't win the MVP.
There's that Donaldson guy, too, who might be in the mix. You never know.
Donaldson's pretty good.
Yeah, he's okay.
And the thing is, he is a two-way player. He does do both.
Do you think the Angels, is there going to come a point where they're going to deal Trout? They're going to have to consider dealing Trout? And I know it's unthinkable on one level, but if you kind of look at where they are organizationally, they're going to be wandering the desert for quite some time with or without him.
Yeah. It's such a tough question. People have grappled with this for, you know, outsiders, insiders. The deal with the Angels is they just have so little other depth. Artie Moreno is so impulsive and does such weird things, you know, overruled his GM on many occasions. You'll note that the GM changed identities not that long ago. That's related. Gave Mike Socha too much latitude. That's related. So you end up with a dysfunctional, I mean, this is almost Steinbrennerian, the old Steinbrenner, where too much meddling from ownership creates a weird situation. So Trout's great. Who's next? Who's the other impact player? I guess maybe a healthy Garrett Richards, if he's ever going to be fully healthy. Position players that just don't have it. Pujols is past his prime. Cole Calhoun is a nice player. He's not that guy. You don't really have anybody else on the horizon. So, yeah, there's an argument to kind of fill the cupboard to say, okay, you know, we wish you well, Mike, but we're going to get six guys. I just think things are more complicated than that. You know, more and more, again, despite being a soulless, number-crunching guy, you come to realize that organizations are defined a little bit by their identity and by revenue-generating mechanisms and so forth. You could argue it's the same thing about the Blue Jays, by the way. The Blue Jays are going to go and you know, throw out vaudevillian clowns in first base and left field, then by definition they should be trading Josh Donaldson because they're not good enough. They're just, oh, blah, blah, blah. But they're saying, wait a minute, we have a baseball renaissance in Toronto. People are talking about it on patios. People are stuffing the stadium. Kids are showing up. We're making money. You can't trade Josh Donaldson. You can't do that because of all these other factors, the Angels are not nearly as good as the Blue Jays, but I think we're kind of talking about a similar thing. The Angels are, you know, moderately well represented in Orange County. They do draw okay. They do have some interest. They have a nice TV contract and all that stuff. They trade Trout. They got a bunch of bumps. And it's nice that you can say, well, Chicago bottomed out and Houston bottomed out. Look how good the Cubs and the Astros are now. Yeah, but that was painful. The Astros had literally a 0.0 TV rating one day. Yeah. Actually, it happened several times. Do the Angels want to go through that? Does Team X want to go through that? That's hard to fathom. And so I think that when push comes to shove, especially with an owner like Moreno, who's all about flash and, you know, this and that, I just don't see that happening. I guess it could happen in 2 years or whatever, but I think the Angels are going to limp along here at 75 wins or worse, and I think Trout's going to remain an Angel.